It's time for Real Money with David Holland. Because David isn't just a radio personality, but also provides financial advice to clients, we must pause for a word from our compliance department.
David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, an investment advisory firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. He also offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Holland Advisory and Holland Insurance Services are separate affiliated companies that share common ownership under Holland Financial. The views and advice expressed by David Holland and guests are general in nature. No statements or opinions given during this radio program are to be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not to be considered an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and financial planning services can only be given after a thorough analysis of an individual situation. An engagement of services to be offered are only in states where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering.
Some people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood and skin and bones. A mind that's weak and a back that's strong. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Welcome to Real Money with David Holland, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. And now for the man who doesn't preach about cutting up credit cards, doesn't waste your time talking about which razor blades to buy, won't tell you to sell everything you own and buy gold, or ever use big words to impress you and talk over your head. Ladies and gentlemen, here he is, David Holland.
Well, welcome. Welcome to the program. And we are glad you're listening because we've got good stuff to share with you. Well, we do every day, but I'm looking forward to getting the rundown from Scott.
The fastest 5 minutes in finance with Scott Connor.
And there it is. So I know you got lots to talk about.
Yeah, there's always plenty of stuff going on. Wednesday's market gave up the 13,000 level on the Dow that we achieved in Tuesday's market.
Yeah, but it felt good.
Yeah, and it's a silly number anyway. S&P down 6 points Wednesday, Dow down 53 to close at 12,951, NASDAQ down 19, oil just about flat, West Texas Intermediate closed at 106 a barrel. Here's my big number for the day, gold down $92.
Holy smokes.
Yep, down to 1695, and it was just last week we were talking about how it was almost 18.
So what happened?
What happened was, and we'll dig into this a little bit more, but Chairman Bernanke did not say more QE. That's what happened.
Okay. So no more money going into the system because they would be buying up the mortgages and then giving the folks that own them cash instead.
Yeah. Now, technically, he didn't say no QE, but he implied that there was not going to be a huge influx of liquidity to the market.
Okay. So that because the reason people go to gold is because of the perception that that will create inflation.
That's exactly right. Okay. That's exactly right. And, you know, we caution folks all the time with commodities in particular. They have a tendency to climb the staircase and drop through the elevator, and we saw that in the last couple of weeks. So that's why it's only reasonable to have a portion of your portfolio in commodities, gold or silver, or whatever it might be.
I've fallen and I can't get up.
Yeah, so, you know, a rough day for gold traders, but overall, not too bad of a market. Fair amount of news in Wednesday's market. We had the second look at fourth quarter GDP. You know, they dragged that one out, but the second look at fourth quarter GDP showed that the economy grew at a 3% annual rate in the fourth quarter. That was a little bit better than expected at 2.8. So
I like that.
That was good news. We had the index of Midwest business activity from the Chicago ISM was up to 64 in February. That's the best level for that number since last April. So that tells us that business activity in the Midwest is pretty good.
Well, the Beige Book came out, and I mean, all areas were showing growth.
And the Beige Book came out, yep. And all areas are showing growth. There's some problem finding skilled workers, which is a little bit at odds with the idea that we have a high unemployment rate. But generally speaking, you know, we say this all the time. Things are going in the right direction. They're just going really slowly.
We got to get out of first gear.
Yeah, we've been in first gear for a while, but we were in reverse for a while. So
what we need is for the leadership of our country, the government, to start doing some driving lessons and showing people how to operate a manual. Here's how you push the clutch in, and here's how you go from first to second to third gear.
Yeah. Yep, you're exactly right. So, you know, we're moving in the right direction. As you said, all 12 regional districts reported rises in new orders, rises in shipments and production. Several of them pointed to more robust investment spending, so that's good news there. Chairman Bernanke also testified in front of Congress today. As we mentioned earlier, just a couple of little sort of sound quips he said, and this will shock you. the labor market is far from normal.
I would agree with that.
How could you not?
What's normal? You know, normal. What would normal be considered that
normal's
you have?
Normal's not 8.3%
inflation.
Yeah,
it's more in the 5% range, right? That's kind of the number.
That would be terrific. But if we were in the sixes, even sixes, I'd say it was normal.
Some encouraging news related to that. I don't know if you're going to get to this, Scott, but I'll throw it in right now. Is U.S. banks posted their biggest quarterly increase in lending in 4 years?
Yeah, bank, and that sector of the marketplace has been on a tear.
Well, and where's a lot of that lending go? Small businesses.
Yeah.
So that, and we got to have the small businesses creating jobs.
Yep. And there's a lot of talk now in the analyst community and strategist community that banks are just going to have to start to loosen their purse strings, or the housing market is just not going to come back. And of course, the banks need the housing market to come back, because what else are they going to lend on?
So it's the who's going to move first kind of thing.
Yeah, but I think we've gone, you know, we were at the extremes of looseness in lending. We've gone back to the extremes of conservatism in lending, and I think we'll find our middle ground. You know, we're starting to inch towards it, but I think we'll start to find that fairly soon.
Okay, so we just need the bankers to lighten up a little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit.
All right, so here's my tongue-in-cheek advice to, if you're applying for a mortgage, just bring a little cooler with a couple of beers on ice and, you know, give the banker a beer and say, relax, it's going to be okay. And if you lighten up, you make loans, the economy will grow stronger, and you'll be able to sell all those homes you guys own.
Yep. And then when we get back, because I know Lisa's about to wave her banner at us, I'm going to tell you about Apple, who has more money. If they lent their money to mortgage to people that need houses, wow, we'd be in good shape.
All right, well, then we'll come right back. Stay tuned.
Have you noticed most of the financial literature available is either so specific it doesn't apply, or too generic to answer even the most basic questions? This revelation inspired David Holland to write his first two books, Confessions of a Financial Planner, Secrets to a Secure Retirement, and How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Financial Scams. These how-to guides contain easily accessible information on a wide variety of topics concerning personal finances. An effortless weekend read, you'll find clarification on what a mutual fund is, how to choose the right financial professional, and much more. Call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN to request a free excerpt from David's first book, Secrets to a Secure Retirement. The number again is 888-747-7526. Or visit davidholland.com for more information on this innovative book series.
Okay, well, let's get back to it, Scott. Hey, let's take a big bite of Apple.
Yeah, big news on Apple. Passed $500 billion in market capitalization. What that means is that if you basically sold the company and turned it into cash, it's worth $500 billion.
That's amazing. Well, and then the market cap is based on the total number of outstanding shares, which is, what's their total number of shares outstanding? It's huge.
Well, it's trading at $540 a share, it's a little less than a billion.
Okay. So, and if you look at times the 500, that's how you get to the market cap. So really, it's just the total value of all shares outstanding, right?
That's right. Now, it's a pretty big deal. There are only six other companies who have ever surpassed the $500 billion mark, and it's the big ones that you would recognize: Microsoft, Cisco, GE, Intel, and Exxon. Now, they're not there now, but they have in the past.
They've been there. They coulda, woulda, shoulda. They did. They were there. Exxon, I did a quick rundown. I know you're going to get into some details about Apple, but I did a quick looking at the market. And Apple, a little over $500 billion. Exxon, next up, a little over $400 billion. Microsoft, $266. IBM, $229 billion. Chevron, $217. Walmart, $203. GE, $202. And Google, $201.
Yeah. Now, Apple shares have been on a tremendous rally.
Well, get this. I mean, here's how big that really is. Apple is so big that you combine the value of Microsoft and IBM, you still don't have Apple.
Well, here are a couple other ways to put that in perspective. It's larger than the GDP of Poland, Belgium, Sweden, Saudi Arabia, Taiwan. Here's another one. I like both of these. The NFL has 33 teams in the NFL. They're worth about $1 billion each. So we're talking about the value of 15 national football leagues. How's that?
That's staggering. Yeah, I'm looking at my CIA World Factbook numbers here, and I'm running down the list, and yeah, all these countries. South Africa, Egypt, Pakistan, Colombia. So their value is larger than what these entire countries produce in a given year.
If you take worldwide lottery sales and double it, It's still less than Apple.
Even the ones that are from Nigeria that you get in your email?
Yeah, okay. I never seem to open those. But the stock's been on a tremendous rally now, which is interesting because all those other companies that I just told you past $500 billion no longer are. It's because they rallied up and came back down. But to put some perspective around the rally, stock's up 35% this year. It took only 34 trading days for Apple to go from $400 a share to $500 a share, and then only 8 more days to go from $500 a share to about $550, which was Wednesday's intraday high.
Well, riddle me this. There are people that are now talking, you got $500? Okay, how about $1 trillion in value?
Yeah.
What do you think about Apple getting to $1,000 a share?
It's not out of the question. I mean, it's not going to happen overnight. And
there's nothing. Is there anything out of whack with them? I mean, their P.E. ratio is 15.5.
Yeah, that's actually pretty cheap for a growth
stock. That's pretty reasonable for a growth stock,
it's
right?
It's pretty cheap for a growth stock.
Of course, the question is, how do you grow a company that is that big?
Yeah.
You got to have a pile of income or more revenue. You got to have a pile of profit on top of what you've already got to be able to increase that.
Well, they're really going to have to do it with new ideas. They're, you know, their big one, obviously, we have next week the iPad 3 announcement, but that's not really a new idea. That's sort of an improvement of an old idea. They're really relying on
what's already in the pipeline.
Yeah, yeah, Apple TV is in the pipeline. They're also getting to be huge in education. Rather than kids toting around backpacks full of books, they're first and foremost as far as education
Everybody
goes.
Carry around an iPad.
Yeah, so they, I mean, they're always thinking of ways to expand that product and to continue to change the way we live, which they've done for the last 8 or 10 years or so.
Well, they haven't called me yet, but when they do, I'm going to tell them some of my ideas include, you know, going with the whole supply chain thing, buying up the suppliers of all their stuff. And then, of course, we've talked before about them having their retail outlets, and maybe they'll get into, I don't know, maybe they'll get, because they're still sitting on a lot of cash, right?
Yeah, tremendous amount of cash.
I mean, what is it like? Well, last time I looked, it was, what, $70 or $80 billion?
Yes, it's a tremendous amount of cash.
So, they could buy a lot of companies for that much money.
They certainly could. Now, they do not seem to have missed a beat with their new CEO. Mr. Cook seems to be just keeping things moving right along, and certainly the analyst community is still pretty excited about Apple.
Well, here's a little bit more perspective, ladies and gentlemen. You know, we talk about large caps, mid caps, small caps, all that stuff when we do investment work, and sometimes you go, well, what in the world is that? Well, Apple would be considered what's called a mega cap.
The mega cap.
The mega cap. They are king of the hill right now. And that's for a company that's total value of all of its stocks is over $200 billion. Now, a bigger large cap is $10 billion to $200 billion or so. Mid cap is $2 billion to $10 billion. Small cap is $300 million to $2 billion. You could have a $1 billion company and still be considered a small company by Wall Street standards. And you have micro cap, which is under $300 million, but over 50, and then a nano cap, which I didn't even know existed. I was doing some reading. International Business Times had a little summary that I used. Nano cap is under $50
million. Yeah, don't trade nano caps.
Yeah, we're not doing nano caps. Because you know what happened? You have nano money.
That's right.
You got to be careful. All right, we're up against a quick break. We'll be right back.
If you like what you hear, you'll love what you see. Watch Real Money with David Holland, the TV show, Mondays at 12:30 p.m. on WESH Channel 2. Are you gambling with too much money invested in the stock market? How can you tell? It's simple. The rule of 100. Take your age and subtract it from 100. The result is how much you might want to keep in the market. The rest should be off the table, invested in something safe. Every rule has an exception, but the rule of 100 is a good starting point to determine if your portfolio is out of balance. Holland Financial is ready to help. Call 888-747-PLAN to schedule your free consultation or visit us at davidholland.com.
This is your 2-minute warning.
Yes, it is. And the warning is, I'm going to shift gears on you. We're going to talk about some tax mistakes that can mess up your retirement. Time of year, tax time, you're thinking about your taxes. You're getting your taxes done. I hope you're getting a jump on it. And also, of course, I'm going to give the retirement angle. Now, one of the things to be careful with is when you are in retirement, or even if you are pre-retirement, is dealing with or working with your IRAs. If you are working and you've got 401ks, 403bs, 457s, a pension, these different things that are accumulating tax deferred, you're going to keep those usually while you're with that particular employer. Now, if you leave your employer and you go to work for another company, you can take that 401k and most of the time, you can move it over, roll it over, do a direct transfer from that 401k into the new company's 401k. That's a nice feature because you kind of keep it all together. But you don't have to do that. I've worked with people where we've rolled that 401k over, moved it into an IRA, and then that gave them a lot more choices for how they invested that money. That's an advantage because you have that flexibility. You can still do the new 401k with a new company. You have new rules on how long you have to wait before you put money in. But by moving your IRA out of the 401k, you open up a world of choices. You can do things hot, cold, medium, super, super safe and secure, or more aggressive than you might be able to do with 401ks. 401ks tend to be a little stodgy. And when I would say that's not the right word, not stodgy, a little bit constrained. Usually you don't have that many choices in the typical 401k. You might have a dozen choices if you're lucky, but roll that IRA over when you leave your employer to a Fidelity or somebody like that. I'm very familiar with them because we work with them. Roll your money in. Oh, well, now you've got the entire universe to invest in practically. But you've also got the ability to go into safer, more secure options. Maybe you want to put your money into a fixed annuity, something that can't go down in value. Some of these types of things are options. Now, if you are going to roll your money into the 401k, obviously it's all in one place and you can invest it accordingly, however is appropriate. Now, if you are ready to do that, you've made the choice to move that 401k into an IRA, you want to do a couple things and be very careful. You want to make sure you do a direct transfer from your 401k into that IRA. If you take the distribution of your 401k money out directly and then want to roll it over yourself, send me the check and I'll figure out what to do with it. Well, you could bang up against some tax rules that can be kind of complicated, and you could have a mandatory withholding, and it gets messy. So my advice very often is to roll that directly. Some of the terminology gets a little confusing, but you want to do what's called a direct trustee-to-trustee transfer. That's the magic word, trustee-to-trustee. That means the folks that are holding it send it directly to the folks that are going to hold it. Those are the trustees of the accounts. If you are already retired, not unusual for people to move their IRAs around. Maybe they've worked with a broker and they've decided to move that account over to somebody else. Very commonly done. Or you've got it in one bank and you move it to another. Again, you want to do the trustee to trustee transfer. By doing that, you can avoid some of the things that can mess you up. There are stories out there, and I've read about them and heard about them, where people don't realize that you have limitations on how many times you can, quote unquote, receive that check and then put it into something else. And if you exceed the rules, the entire IRA could be taxable. You hear what I said? That is extraordinary. You got a $100,000 IRA, and if you don't follow the rules, you mess up. The IRS is not very forgiving in this area. You could be looking at taxes on the entire value of your IRA. So please be careful with how you handle your IRAs and any of these accounts that are qualified. The same is true for anything tax deferred like an annuity. If you've had a variable annuity or a fixed annuity and you're going to move it over, you want to make sure you know how you're moving it over. If you've got some gains in there, anything in excess of what you put in is going to be taxed as ordinary income if you draw that money out of the annuity and you use it, as opposed to rolling it from, say, one annuity to another, which is also commonly done when people are making changes and, you know, restructuring their accounts or making improvements. So be very careful with these things that have not been taxed. Now, I need to take a quick break, but when I come back, I want to talk about some of the mechanics of dealing with IRAs, especially when it relates to how you're going to designate the beneficiaries on your IRAs and how the beneficiaries can take that IRA and what they can do with it, and then a little bit about trust. Stick around. I'll share more right after the break.
There are hundreds of annuities available in today's marketplace. How can you know if one is right for you? Certified financial planner David Holland answers this question and more in his educational booklet on annuities. To get your free copy, call Holland Financial at 888-747-PLAN. The annuity booklet provides a plain English explanation of the different types of annuities so you can decide if one is a good fit for your situation. Again, that number is 888-747-7526.
Okay, now, before the break, I was talking about IRAs and how you handle them. Here's another very important area for IRAs, but it's also true for really any of your accounts. You've got to make sure you've got your beneficiaries designated. Now, let me walk you through this. Very important. Your regular accounts, your mutual funds, your brokerage accounts, your bank CDs, your cash accounts, all of those things are usually controlled by your will, or if you have a trust and you've put them into your trust. They don't typically have beneficiary designations, although you can designate a transfer on death or paid on death designation for bank accounts, CDs. Your brokerage account can be set up that way. And what that does is it automatically transfers the ownership to a designated beneficiary. Very often people don't do that because they want their will to control where those things are going to go. I want each, you know, my four or five beneficiaries to each get a percentage of my total value of my estate. And that's what the will does. Or you can use a trust and it can do the same thing. You need to put stuff in the trust, though, if you want the trust to operate. There have been stories of people who have these beautiful gold-plated, perfectly framed trusts that are up on the bookshelf and there's nothing in them. Literally, the trust is not worth anything if you don't have stuff that you've transferred into the trust and made the owner, the trust is the owner of that asset, like a bank account or a mutual fund or a piece of property or your house. A lot of times people use the will to get the property into the trust. So the will and trust are very important. But when it comes to IRAs and annuities, you need to designate the beneficiary. And what I say by that is that IRAs are supposed to have a listed beneficiary. If there's not a listed beneficiary, guess who gets it? Your estate. And then it gets mingled with everything else, and then it can become taxable, which is a bad thing, okay? What you want to do is, for these accounts, you want to designate the beneficiary, because if it's done correctly, get this, this is very cool. If you do it correctly, an IRA can, if you designate your spouse or children or whoever it is, that IRA then can transfer and they can receive it as what's called an inherited IRA or a beneficiary IRA. Now, the cool thing about that is it can continue to be tax deferred. Isn't that great? So by continuing the tax deferral, you avoid, let's say you've got, I'll use a $100,000 IRA and you've got two children and you leave 50-50. They each will get an IRA worth $50,000. If they just take the money, they're going to have a tax bill for how much? $50,000 is going to be the taxable income that will go on top of their existing income. So if somebody's making $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year, you throw another $50,000 of income, it's going to get taxed at a higher bracket, maybe 25% bracket. So by having them designated as the beneficiaries, and if it's handled properly, we work with this all the time, so you got to do it properly. You roll that IRA over into a beneficiary IRA that is still titled in the decedent, the person who died, their name, but it's the person that owns it is the beneficiary, then you can avoid them having to pay the tax on top of what they've already got all in 1 year. And the cool thing about doing that is that they can then stretch out. You've heard the term stretch IRA. It's the same thing. That's what I'm talking about. Taking an IRA that you receive, and it's an inherited IRA, and then taking a little bit out every year is stretching it. And what you can do is only have to pay tax on a little bit of money every year. And the bottom line is this IRA then can continue to grow and can become part of your children or beneficiaries' retirement for them. So they are still they have to take out required distributions, just like you do if you're over 70. But the nice thing is that they're able to push off having that tax bill all in 1 year. But it's got to be done carefully and precisely. What I want everyone to do is, if you've got IRAs and you've got you're retired or you're getting closer to retirement and you've got these beneficiaries, you need to talk to them and tell them what you've done so that there aren't surprises or mistakes and they don't mess it up accidentally. Because, you know, sometimes kids will see that money and say, okay, well, I guess I got to cash it in, and or they want to get to it and use it for something. I want to pay off my house with that. Mom always wanted me to pay off my house. Well, no, you need to roll that over and draw that money out slowly, and that way you keep your taxes from coming too high. So there you go. Those are some of the things you can avoid mistake-wise with IRAs and avoid wrecking your retirement and also helping the next people to get your money, not mess theirs up. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. Thank you.
80. 30.
50.
Every mile brings us closer.
25.
Every mile in a city near you.
75.
Help us stop diabetes.
100.
Join the Tour de Cure.
60.
Register to ride.
36.
Or sponsor a rider.
50.
Call 1-888-DIABETES or visit us online at diabetes.org/tour. How many miles will you ride?
25.
The following top secret message is ready for declassification.
Fancy, fancy. Yep, it is top secret. Well, not really. But what I want to share with you is I had some requests to talk more about annuities on the program today. And I had gotten into it a little bit earlier in the week about annuities and how they can work and also some of the noise that surrounds them. I found them to be appropriate in many situations. In some cases, they're not. But it can be part of an overall plan. Now, a couple things that are important for you to know about annuities, and I've got an annuity booklet, by the way, that you can call my office and you can get a copy of for free, no charge, the 671-7526. Call our office and I'll be happy to send you an annuity booklet. It explains how all these annuities are put together and the different types and how to make sense of them. There are two major types of annuities. It gets confusing because there's different types. There's an immediate annuity and a deferred annuity. Those are two major types. And then within those two major types, there are some different ones underneath it. You know, people, it's funny when I talk to people, if we get into a conversation about annuities, they say, hey, I heard annuities aren't good, or I hear they're great. And I'm like, well, both of those things may not be correct. Depends on what you're talking about, you know. And I've heard people say, well, this person said this isn't good, or this person says that's not good. I think you've got to look at your individual situation, and that's how we determine whether or not different types of annuities may make sense. And also evaluating the different companies. There's companies I won't work with, companies that offer annuities. I'm just not comfortable with them, either because of their ratings or something else that I don't like about them. And that's just the way it works. Now, when you look at the immediate annuity is kind of like having your own pension. You could put a specific dollar amount into an annuity and you can know exactly how much you're going to receive every month. So it's kind of like buying your own pension. You know, it used to be, once upon a time, a lot of people had pensions. Now, not so much. You know, you got to do it yourself, so to speak. So one of the cool things I like about annuities is that you can buy your own pension for X number of dollars. You know you're going to get a certain amount of income for the rest of your life. There are also deferred annuities, and there's three major types of deferred annuities. Variable annuities, which is when your money's invested in the stock market inside the variable annuity. You have fixed annuity, or a traditional fixed annuity, or a multi-year annuity. It's got different names, but basically a fixed annuity, it earns interest. And you put your money in, it earns interest, which can be higher or lower than CDs. Right now they're higher. And you can defer your payments drawing income until some point in the future, and you don't pay tax on the interest inside the annuity, which is kind of cool, especially if we get into a higher tax environment. You know, we start seeing tax rates that are over 40% for highest income people. There's going to be a lot more interest in deferred annuities. The fixed annuity is the second type. Your principal's safe and you can earn interest. The third type is the fixed index or index annuity. Your principal is also secure in these. Your money's not invested in the market, but you do have the opportunity to earn interest tied to the market. So a little bit of having the principal plus the opportunity to earn more than a fixed rate. So where some of the confusion comes in is there are different types of annuities. One of the things I really like about the annuity, you know, it makes sense obviously for a retiree who's looking for income. You know, the annuity can be one of the ways to get that. But here's something else that's very interesting. If you are 50, 55, 60, you're still 5, 10, 15 or more years away from retirement. What's really neat is you can say, okay, I've got money that I'm making now, or I've got a chunk of money that I'm looking to do something with. I'm not quite sure. I'm afraid of the market. One of the neat things you can do is you can throw yourself a pass. Well, let me say it again. You can throw yourself, your future self, a pass today. You can throw money into the future. And what I mean by that is you can buy an annuity today for X dollars and you'll know precisely how much that annuity will give you when you turn 60 or 62 or 65. And so you can kind of start laying money up for the future and kind of put it out there and say, okay, I've got X amount of money. You know, I've got $50,000 that I've saved up and I want to use this for my retirement, but I don't want to lose it. You can throw that to the future and you'll know that for every dollar you put out there, it's going to give you that income. So it's pretty neat to be able to use an annuity for that kind of situation. And that's where I found it to be effective. There are a lot of different times, so I recommend people consult with an independent advisor to help sort them out. And that's probably the most important thing I can tell you about annuities, is to find somebody that is very familiar with them and to help you figure out which one makes the most sense. But don't forget about the booklet, 671-7526. Call and get that. I'll be happy to send it to you. That's all the time we have today. Thanks for listening.
Want to learn more about Real Money with David Holland? Visit us at realmoneyradio.com, where you can listen live or to the archives. You can also email us your questions, comments, or show ideas to info@realmoneyradio.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook at Real Money with David Holland, and keep up with Scott Connor by following us on Twitter at Real Money Radio.
Remember, nobody cares more about your money than you do. This has been Real Money with David Holland. Thank you for listening.
You load 16 ton, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.